Welcome to episode 393 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther. And this is the show where we talk about Microsoft Entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms and across a whole lot of property here in Las Vegas, Nevada.
A whole lot of property. Yep, we are here in Vegas for CES 2017. Today is Sunday. The show is now officially over. Thank God.
And we are exhausted.
Yeah, you lovely listeners are in for a treat tonight because we're exhausted. I've got a cold. We're both starting to lose our voices. The exhaustion means that we're not even putting sentences together very well. So this is probably going to be a train wreck, but it's fun to do anyway. And it's the one time of the year that we get to record a podcast actually in real life face-to-face.
That's so true. I forget about that.
Yeah.
We do this about once a year. Well, once a year.
Right. It's pretty much just CES. So yeah, wow. Richard and I are sitting in a hotel room about 8 feet apart from each other, and that is very unusual for us. We're used to obviously just doing this all over Skype. None of this matters to you guys, though, so we should probably move on. CES is over. Richard, everyone wants to know what we feel the trends were this year, and if they're trends that we care about.
I think some of them we do. I'm not as excited about the big trends this year. I think one could argue that smart home and the connected home was a big trend, but that's not really what we talk about on this show. VR and AR, unsurprisingly, had a huge, huge presence. And that certainly will be making its way, as we saw in many vendors' demonstrations, into the entertainment space.
Yeah, virtual reality and augmented reality were absolutely huge this year. There was about a quarter of one of the giant halls was dedicated to those two areas. And there was some cool stuff there, some interesting entrants. A lot of it wasn't really that cool. A lot of it was still really far away. So we expected this to be big, but I think we also expected that most of this wouldn't be quite ready yet. So, you know, but it does seem weird. Like 2 years ago, I remember coming to CES and one of the biggest things in South Hall was the setup for Oculus Rift.
Yes.
And they didn't even have a big setup this year, but there were HTC Vives in like a billion different booths. Like they were all over the place. And yeah, like it's just interesting that the big guys, now that they're out, for some reason, they don't seem to really be here now. Like HTC isn't here demoing all of their stuff because they don't have anything new really. And the same with Oculus Rift. So it's all the little guys and the guys trying to do VR with phones. And but you know what I didn't see, Richard?
What's that?
I didn't see any VR or AR headsets or anything, and I can't remember the name of the product now, but Microsoft talked just a couple months ago about them opening the HoloLens stuff up and us seeing VR headsets for Windows that would be in the $300, you know, starting at like $300. And I asked about that technology to a couple of vendors, and none of them, like a lot of them didn't even know what I was talking about.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. So that's probably not a great sign in terms of in terms of people looking for those specifically functioning for Microsoft stuff.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, I think it's no surprise that I've been kind of bearish on that whole platform. Now, HoloLens, on the other hand, I think is very cool and has a lot of opportunity. We both saw a demonstration at the Intel booth using HoloLens really just for effect. They had a vehicle that was supposed to be an autonomous vehicle, and you sat in the vehicle and you could see what I would categorize as somewhere between first and generation Tron style animations around the vehicle and through the vehicle windows. That was my first experience with HoloLens. I think what it did is kind of cool. I am a little frustrated by the tiny little viewing area. That it is not as bad as I expected, but it is very limiting. And I don't think it was the most effective demonstration of the technology.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't the most effective demonstration. It's also the first time that I've gotten to put a HoloLens on my big head. And dude, that thing is heavy. It's really heavy. But, you know, it's not going to be the product that people are going to be using out in the real world. Like, if you want to do AR, you're not going to buy a $3,000 developer AR headset. So, but yeah, like you said, the demonstration of it was not very useful, but it was an opportunity for me to finally try out the HoloLens. And I completely agree with you on the field of view. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. I think with AR, field of view only matters. Well, it matters based on what you're doing. Like, if you're just doing like a head-up display sort of thing, then it doesn't matter at all because it's just always in your view and it doesn't move. But Microsoft with the HoloLens likes to point out that, you know, you just look all over the room and you see things all over the place. And, you know, when they're big things, you pretty much always have to move your head around to be able to see the entire thing that you're looking at.
Right, right. It's like, you know, pan and scan to be able to look at it one little glimpse at a time.
Right. Yeah. So not super cool, but I did see some decent AR technology here. But why don't we move on? What's the next big trend we saw?
Trend two, drones from everybody, including vendors we didn't even know that made drones.
Yeah. Drones everywhere. Even drones from was it alarm.com? That was the coolest one.
Well, so one. Yeah, I mean, really interesting. There are security companies talking about implementing drones in a way that could help augment the security process. In the case of alarm.com, they just had an announcement with, I believe it is Qualcomm, that would be powering drones that if there is an alarm triggered in your home, you would essentially have a scout drone in your home that would go to the reported location of the problem to video what's going on. Now, you know, there are security systems out there. In fact, I talked with one this week that kind of pride themselves on video verified alarms, that you have a camera in every room where you have something that could be alarmed, so you can always verify it yourself. That requires having a camera in every room. This could alleviate that problem. Plus, drones flying around the house. How cool is that?
Well, that's super cool. But if I'm going to have a drone for my alarm system, it better have some pew-pew lasers on it so that it can shoot at the people with lasers
or as
they break into my house.
I think our friend Chris had suggested maybe just like the three lasers that you have on Predator that look like they're trying to create a point that you might get shot if you stand there.
That would probably work. I think that's probably enough. You don't have to actually shoot them, but that would probably work. So the last one, and it seems like the winner of CES was a company and a service who wasn't even officially here.
Arguably, again.
Yeah. And that is, of course, Amazon's voice services. I'm going to say the word, guys. Sorry. Alexa was everywhere. She was in absolutely everything. And Google's assistant technology was in a couple of things here and there.
Right.
Cortana wasn't anywhere. Did you see Cortana anywhere?
No, I didn't see Cortana anywhere. Sony, of course, is building their own because that's what Sony does. But it was Amazon's voice services and Google's voice services. And it was hard to find a product. We joked with a vendor this afternoon that we thought they were the only product we had spoken with that didn't incorporate voice services.
Right. Yeah. It was crazy. And it was probably at least 10 to 1 Alexa to Google.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think that makes sense because it's a more mature model. You know, arguably Google is very young in this space, even though they perhaps have the best artificial intelligence engine and the most data, their API and their capabilities are very limited still. That's going to change, I think. I think there's going to be a big opportunity for them as they continue to evolve. But Alexa has grown so much in this past year, and you can see that vendors are really glomming onto it. So that was really interesting. The one thing that I noticed is that it was even in things that you wouldn't expect it to be in. We'll talk about one of those on an upcoming episode of Home On, but it was even in set-top boxes. And an example of that is the Dish is experimenting with integrating the Amazon Echo. So this isn't a matter of putting the AVS, the voice services, into their own product, but with associating a box in your home with a specific Echo device in your home, so that the most nearby device, or the one that you would designate as this one controls this set-top box, would be a voice controller for that box. Could change the channel, could search for things, could ultimately be able to pause and play and stuff like that. You know, the kind of things that you're supposed to be able to do with Cortana. I don't know how sold I am on that, because I would argue that that doesn't always work as well as I want it to, even on the Xbox.
Works out pretty well for me on the Xbox, and I use it all the time. It just doesn't work for my three-year-old, who just yells louder and louder and louder. All right, so let's get on to a little bit of the news here. And I'm just going to preface this and say, we're not going to, like, we normally go pretty in-depth on the podcast, talking about our news stories. We've got a lot of them, guys. We've written up most of them. So we're going to hit on the high points and recommend that you, if you haven't already, head on over to the DMZ and read these articles. They're all good. They're all going to be linked here in the show notes for you to check out. So let's start with the company that we had our very first appointment of the week with, and that would be Silicon Dust, makers of the HD Home Run tuners and the HD Home Run DVR. They're not showing on the show floor. They haven't had an actual booth in at least 3 years.
Yeah, it's been a couple years. I think probably 5 years, actually.
They were on the floor at least once for me.
Okay.
So, yeah. But so they're not showing any new products or anything, or else maybe they would be on the floor. Instead, they just met with us to talk about their upcoming plans. And of course, we wanted to know what's going on at the DVR. You guys launched this or announced this close to 2 years ago at this point. It was April of 2015. I can't believe it was that long ago. Started their Kickstarter, and it's not ready yet. We thought it would be ready a lot sooner than this, and it's not. So we asked them, when is it going to be ready? And then what does that mean for it to be ready? And what they told us was they're expecting a release candidate, which means it's the final release before they actually make it officially released in Q1. Q1 was the most precise of a date that they would give to us for that. And then they figured the release candidate would be 2 to 4 weeks, and then finally push it out to everybody. That means even if you weren't a Kickstarter backer, you could get it. There's one big caveat with this, though, that we should probably point out. When this officially launches, it will only support over-the-air TV and unprotected cable. If you've got copy-protected DRM channels, they're not going to work yet. And that stinks, but it sounds like it's a ton of work and with a whole lot of risk on their side.
Yeah, but let's be really clear about this. They're not doing it. They are still working on that, but it is not ready. And that is pretty much true with most of this. This has turned out to be a much bigger, more complicated endeavor than they anticipated for a variety of reasons, not the least of as you know, on these things has turned out to be just kind of approval on all this stuff to get this stuff out. So right now it looked, you know, you say quarter one because they say quarter one, and then a couple weeks after that for release. I'm going to hedge a little bit and say, so a production release, not a release candidate, a production publicly available release sometime quarter two. That's what I'm going to be betting on.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty solid way to go with that.
And I don't want this to sound negative. I mean, I think that everything that we learned and have heard over the last 2 years from the folks at Silicon Dust has reinforced that they are continuing to work on this. They have, you know, they are 100% behind this. This is not that they are losing interest in it at all. If anything, they're probably putting more effort into it now than they expected to be putting into it at this stage in the game to ensure that this product gets out in, you know, a reasonable amount of time.
All right, so moving on, we also found a box that's from a little startup in Texas looking to make a Windows 10 based home theater PC. It's called the company is called Homebase. The product is the Homebase Hub, and it is a little Intel NUC based home theater PC. They've got a partnership with a company that sells Intel NUCs that basically makes these a little bit cheaper. They've got partnerships with Silicon Dust. They've got partnerships with Flex that we'll get into in a minute. And they're going all in on this. So the idea is there's two different models. One of them has a Celeron with 2 gigs of RAM and a 32 gig SSD. The other one has an i5 with 8 gigs of RAM and 128 gig SSD. But then they both have 2 terabytes of storage because, you know, you need lots of storage in a home theater PC. They've got their own remote that has a keyboard on the back of it, which is really nice for doing search queries, of course. But in terms of an actual user interface, you know, they're not making their own DVR software or anything like that. Their plan is you use the apps that are already available. There's a Netflix app on Windows 10. There's an HD Home Run app on Windows 10. And anything that there isn't an app for, well, you've got web browsers for that too. It's especially if you get the i5 version, it's got Steam, which you could, of course, configure to run in big picture mode and hook up your Xbox controller to it. But browsing all of that from a 10-foot interface would be terrible. So they've made their own custom UI that's basically a launcher for this stuff. And oddly, they've made it look like an old version of iOS.
Yeah. I mean, there's two odd things there. iOS and old.
Right.
It looks like the previous generation of iOS that allowed you to group things for the first time into, quote, folders. And so you have these tiles, and the tiles are either apps or they're folders with apps in them. It's a good metaphor. I just don't understand if this is built on top of Windows 10. Why didn't they make it more tile-y and less squircle-y?
Right. I don't really understand. I went back to get some hands-on time with it myself, and they're saying that this is going to be ready in March. It's not going to be ready in March. But, you know, we're used to that. It's CES. No one ever hits the dates that they say at CES unless that date is, oh yeah, it's available today. That's the only way anybody ever hits a date at CES. So this is not coming in March, but we're going to keep an eye on these guys, see what they come up with. We've had some interesting feedback from people on the website when we posted this. Some people said, you know, yeah, this is fairly cheap for a Windows 10 PC, but why would I spend $800 on a PC when an NVIDIA Shield is $200 and it does basically all the same stuff and they've already got the UI stuff figured out?
Right. And exactly. And it comes with a 10-foot UI and you're not using universal apps that may or may not work properly with a remote control. So. Yeah, I admire what they're doing. I'd love to see someone do this right, and maybe the feedback that they get might push them into the direction of something that's a better overall experience. I think you buried the lead here. Did you mention that this comes with an annual or a year-long Flex Plus Pass or Flex Pass or whatever it's called? I can never remember it.
It needs a few more P's. Yes, it does include 1 year of Flex Pass, which you're going to need if you're going to be doing Flex DVR. You wouldn't need that if you went with HD Home Run DVR, but you'd have to be paying those guys. But Flex is awesome, so it does make sense. And it's cool that you get a free year of Flex Pass with this.
Well, and there are many other features that you get out of your Flex Pass with that fee. So, I think that's a nice thing that they're including. Sure. All right. Well, next up, we have a new version of Dish Anywhere that Dish is showing. And honestly, I just accidentally happened on this. And I was there quite coincidentally at the same time that Julie Jacobson from CE Pro Magazine was there. And we both had the exact same reaction to what they were showing in this demo. So we've talked about the Dish Anywhere product in the past. It's essentially their app for allowing you to get to your TV, your live broadcasts, your schedule, your DVR content, including Primetime Anywhere, and on-demand content that Dish has available all in an app. Available on tablets, available on phones. It's available over the web, so you can get it on your PC or on your Mac. It's going to be available with a 10-foot interface. And the first platform that they're developing for is Fire TV. So they were demonstrating. So think about this for a minute. This is essentially everything that you need from your home DVR on a set-top box that costs $40 if you buy the Fire TV stick. Now, it's not going to be 4K, so it's not exactly like having the 4K Joey as an extender to the Dish Hopper DVR. But if you have the Hopper DVR with Sling and you need an extender in a set-top box, you can pretty much put this in any room. Yeah, like a kitchen TV or something like that. That's ideal. That's a great way of getting this. But here's where this gets really exciting. A lot of people travel with the Fire TV stick because it has the ability to allow you to log in through hotel Wi-Fi, even with the private portal logins that they require.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So essentially, this will give you the ability to have remote access to your DVR, your live television, your grid guide, and all the on-demand content available as a part of your Dish subscription for free anywhere in the United States.
That's pretty awesome. But I think the other big thing there is that if you use this at other non-primary televisions around your house, it's $40 instead of whatever the monthly rental fee would be on a Joey. So
yeah, that's
this
a good
could
point.
Save you a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to bet that monthly rental is $10 to $15 per Joey.
It could be. I don't know. I honestly don't know what the rates are for the Joey extenders. Now, I don't know if this is going to allow you to do all the things that you can do on a Joey or even on the Dish Anywhere app that's available on a tablet. For example, you could record programs from the schedule if you were using those devices. I don't know if this is going to be able to do that, but still, this is a really compelling offering. I don't know when it's coming out. They weren't giving any specific dates. They weren't talking about whether it would be on other platforms. They talked about this is where they want to be going. It's currently the first one that they've tried. This is like an experiment, if you will. But they expect to bring it out sometime this year. I'm very excited about this. I think it's cool.
And hopefully we'll see it on the Xbox.
And that would be really cool. I was thinking about that too.
That'd be very nice. Well, the other thing from, I guess Dish is a parent company of Sling, right? Sort of. I can never figure out that relationship anymore.
Yeah, they're all interrelated.
Right. So was a new box from Sling TV called the Air TV Player. It is a small, you know, it looks like a Roku or an Apple TV or whatever, except uglier. Box that's based on Android TV.
Like a Roku made for children.
Yes, it does look like it. Let's just get straight to that. It's a tiny white box that has like a blue stripe around the bottom, which I could almost live with. But the remote is hideous. It's white, but like a third of it down the vertical direction also has the blue. Like, why would you do this?
The irony of this is that while we were here, I went and I spoke with Universal Electronics that makes the remote for that device. And they're showing off the product because they're so proud of the remote they created.
And, you know, actually, as I was looking at it, I thought, you know, a white remote wouldn't actually be that bad. I could find a white remote on my couch a lot easier than all of these black remotes that I have. But a white one with a blue stripe is pretty freaking ugly. Anyway, this box, what does it do? It is an Android TV box designed for Sling TV. So it's, of course, got Sling TV app on it. It's supposed to be optimized for Sling TV. They said that a few times to me when I talked to them. It's also got Netflix and YouTube and things like that because an Android TV box. But the cool thing here is that it has an Air TV adapter, which allows you to plug in an over-the-air tuner. Now, it's just one tuner, and you can't record. I double-checked. You cannot record currently. It's on the roadmap, though. They did tell me that's on the roadmap. But if they're going to add recording, they're also going to need to add at least another tuner.
Right.
So that may or may not be coming. But they've gone to the effort of putting the OTA channels and the Sling channels together in the guide. Their guide's a little wonky, and you have to scroll past all of the Sling channels to get to your over-the-air channels, but they are there, so that's good. It also does 4K because it's an Android TV. It's a Google Cast box. If you don't care about the over-the-air tuner and you're just looking for a device because you don't have an Xbox One or one of the many other things, Roku's still cheaper. This box is $99. If you want it with the tuner stuff, it's $130. I think this is a great thing.
Yeah, it's not bad. Now, one thing that I did learn about from the Universal Electronics folks that I think is really cool is that they've created a technology that works with HDMI CEC, and it works on this box to help kind of automatically figure out where, like, what device is plugged in where. And so if you have a TV that uses HDMI CEC and you're using the remote to try and control this, your TV should automatically figure out what you're controlling and switch to that based on you're using the remote. I don't quite understand. It seems like it's more than just plain old regular CEC commands that's doing it, but something that they've built on top of CEC that almost makes the port assignments, your HDMI connector assignments, much less important if you were to switch something. Kind of cool.
That is cool. And for all I know, that could just be something that's been built into HDMI CEC forever. But since no one ever does a good job of integrating it, who knows?
All right. Now, another thing that you had a chance to take a deep dive into is the NVIDIA Shield. And there's a lot of information out there about their recent announcements and a lot of confusion about their recent announcement. Josh, why don't you set us straight on that stuff?
Yeah, it's unfortunate how bad a lot of the other press outlets got this story. All they had to do was wander to the obvious place where you would find a gaming and streaming device next to all of the auto manufacturers.
Why did nobody think of that?
And that's where you could get all of your questions answered. So that's what I did. All right, so we've got a new NVIDIA Shield TV box. It's coming out this month. The price is staying the same. It's $200 or $300 if you want the bigger hard drive. New controller. But the cool thing here is that the one major service that NVIDIA Shield has always been missing, because Google and Amazon hate each other, is Amazon Video. Somehow, NVIDIA convinced Amazon to put their channel on the NVIDIA Shield. So 4K, HDR, Amazon on the NVIDIA Shield, plus all the other things that it already has. It's not where it ends, though. Because it's Android TV, and it's probably the latest version of Android, it's going to be the first set-top box that supports Google Assistant. And that means all of the, you know, ask Google to do things for you services. It's Google's version of the Echo stuff. It'll be built in. You know, Google, at their last big event, their developer event this summer, they showed the ability to use Google Assistant on a TV, but they didn't say what would do it. This is the first device to do it. It's not a device from Google. This is. And that means that you can say things like, okay, we'll say Jeeves. Okay, Jeeves, show me all my photos from my trip to Las Vegas. And they'll just pop up on the TV because it knows all that stuff. To do that, you need an always-on mic. And their controller has always had a mic in it, but it has never been enabled all the time. It's not an always-on mic. The new controller, which, by the way, feels a whole heck of a lot better. If you want a game on an NVIDIA Shield, buy the new one because the controller is a million times better. It also has an always-on mic. Just set it on your coffee table, and you can say, okay, Jeeves, and it'll hear you.
What does that do to battery?
I don't know. It can't be great. You know? But how's the battery life on the Amazon Tap?
Well, you actually don't have an always-on mic on the Amazon Tap. You have to
tap it. Duh. Right. I don't know. I'm not sure. I that was probably the one question I didn't ask. They do have another solution for that, though, that doesn't require batteries at all, and that's a new device that they're coming out with called the NVIDIA Spot, and it is a small microphone and speaker that plugs into an outlet. It's basically the size of a single outlet. It doesn't block the other the other port in your outlet. And it's just mics that you could put all over your house. And they're $50 a pop, which seems pretty good. They're not out yet, though. And we don't really know when they're going to be out. When I talked to the NVIDIA rep, he said, I wouldn't expect it in the first half of the year.
I don't think I've ever had anybody answer a when will it be available question with a negative response.
Right. Yeah, that was like I...
Not right away.
Right. I had to ask him again because I wasn't sure if that's actually what he said. Yeah, that was unusual. So it does all of that. So you've basically got the current Sling TV before, plus all of this Google Assistant stuff, plus, and this is the part that everybody seemed to really screw up, including NVIDIA in their own press release, it will eventually work as a SmartThings hub.
With one condition.
With one big condition that it wasn't mentioned anywhere. You're going to need a SmartThings USB stick to do this because they didn't add a Z-Wave radio and a Zigbee radio and all this stuff to the NVIDIA Shield. That would be weird. So you're going to have to buy one of these sticks that basically isn't available right now. And they don't really have an answer. The NVIDIA guys didn't have an answer as to when this stick might become available or how much it would cost. But once it is available, you plug that into your NVIDIA Shield. You've probably already got big hard drive plugged into your NVIDIA Shield. And this box could be your Plex server, your HD Home Run DVR server, your SmartThings hub, your Google Assistant hub. Like, and that doesn't even, like, I didn't even mention all of the streaming stuff that you can do in 4K with HDR.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I'm a little bit leery of the SmartThings integration announcement. When we learned that this required the USB stick, and I said, huh, really? Is that actually available anywhere? And the answer is, well, not really.
Right.
This reminds me a whole lot of 3 years ago. I think it was 3 years ago when we spoke with folks at Zonoff who were kind of put in the position by Staples of explaining a press release that Staples made saying our new Staples Connect is going to work with Insteon. Oh, well, yeah, with an Insteon add-in module that was never created by folks at Insteon.
Right, or anybody else for that matter.
Right. So we'll have to see if this ever happens, but if it does, you know, we've talked about the whole idea of putting smart connectivity for your home into appliances around your home. This is a great way to do it. I think the set-top box is a perfect location for something like that. Because I might argue that the set-top box probably has about the same expected life as a smart hub that you might use around your home.
Yeah, I think that's fair. The only type of appliance that I think makes more sense to be your smart home hub is your router.
Well, and funny, we know about one of them.
Funny, we do, and we really, really like it. That would be, of course, the Almond 3 from Securify. Go back and read our review of that. We love it. We also have news from them. And Richard, you talked to Rom, the CEO, and you'll have them on an upcoming episode of Home On, right?
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. One more sort of big thing before we get into the big obvious elephant in the room whenever you talk about CES, and that is Razer's Project Ariana. This got a ton of press. People seem to love this thing. And our listeners are awesome. Our listeners love and know Microsoft. I'm sure every single one of them, as soon as they saw this, they said, this is Microsoft Illuma Room. We saw this 2 years ago. It might have been 3 years ago. I'm not sure how long ago it was. It was forever ago because it was using Xbox 360 Kinects with projectors to project more of the gaming experience around your entire room.
Right.
Your entire room.
Right.
There's lots of projectors, lots of Kinects. Project Ariana is one projector, and it doesn't have a Kinect, but it's got two 3D cameras in it to sort of figure out depth and where to blast the stuff. And it is smart enough to figure out how to blast the gaming experience onto your wall, around your TV, without blasting light onto your TV, because that would be really terrible.
Right.
And the idea is, you know, if you're playing a first-person shooter, you normally see your hands and the weapon that it's holding and what's out in front of you. And with Project Ariana, it can project more of what's around you off to the side and above and below the screen. But it was weird. So, like, they were showing Shadow Warrior 2. It's a first-person action game where you're holding a sword, and you see the hands and the sword on the TV, and then projected to the side of the TV was, like, more of the arms that you wouldn't normally see. But the arms looked comically huge. Like, they were really big.
Because they're being kind of spread out in the space on the wall, right?
I guess, but it seems like they're trying to say that the technology should be able to compensate for that so that it doesn't look unusually large. But it looked unusually large to me. The other big problem, there's so many problems with this. The next problem is you're going to have an amazeballs projector to have it be able to blast the same amount of light onto your wall next to your super bright TV to not have a huge noticeable difference in light, you know, right next to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know that LumaRoom would have solved that problem either. And it's further exacerbated by the fact that TVs nowadays, particularly with things like OLED and Quantum Dot, are incredibly vivid without looking ridiculous. So we have them with these wonderfully bright settings, and you still get to see all the detail. And it just creates more contrast with anything that you might be trying to project in the room.
Right. So the projected part just didn't really look all that great. And it certainly doesn't look great next to a really great TV. Then, of course, it's expensive. We have no idea how much, but it's a 4K projector. So it's got to be, you know, well over $1,000 in addition to the TV that you already bought. And it's PC only. And you have to have a white wall to blast this onto. Richard, do you know anybody who has their TV mounted on the wall with a white wall with nothing else on that wall?
Well, the nothing else on the wall is probably what killed it. I mean, I know lots of people with white walls, but not that have nothing but a television. Yeah, it's going to be a challenge for sure. I'm hoping that the fact that this still has the catchy name of Project Ariana, that this is still something of an R&D effort, and they're looking for feedback, and they're going to listen to what they're hearing from people as they see this.
Yeah, hopefully. And just so that we're clear, I'm sure a bunch of our listeners are saying, Josh, when Project LumaRoom was announced, you were really excited about this. You thought it would be really cool. I would like to think that if what I saw today was the same thing that a LumaRoom was, that I would have walked away with the same thing, the same feelings. Because I think you're right. That there's no way that Microsoft would have had magical projectors that could have blasted enough light onto the wall to make it not look so obviously terrible next to a great TV. Like, I just, this isn't actually making it more immersive.
Right. And I think what they showed in a LumaRoom, or at least what was sneaked, if you will, I think I seem to remember seeing pictures. It looked like the room images were environmental, that they weren't trying to extend the objects or the action on the screen outside of the frame of the screen, that all that you saw in the room was environmental imagery that matched what you were seeing on the screen.
Could be. I don't actually remember. I don't think it matters. LumaRoom's never come in, and I'm not convinced that Project Ariana will either.
Wow. All right. Well, let's end our list of new things that we saw with some highlights, some big highlights. Well, big in some dimensions, very small in others.
Ridiculously small in others. And we're, of course, talking about the new TVs. LG wins. LG just wins. They've got the OLED. It looks phenomenal. OLED is just such a gorgeous technology. And this OLED that they've got out now, it's the new W7. What they've done is they've removed everything out of the panel that isn't required for blasting light into your eyeballs. All of it. It's all gone in another box, which we'll get to in a minute. Which means that TV only needs to be thick enough to hold the actual light-emitting stuff.
Right.
Turns out that's 3 millimeters. But most people don't even know what 3 millimeters is, besides the fact that that's like a third the thickness of an iPhone, one third the thickness of an iPhone.
Right.
Take 3/4 out of your pocket and stack them up. That's 3 millimeters.
Yeah. I heard someone reference it as 4 credit cards without the embossing. So the thickness of the edge of 4 credit cards. Crazy, crazy, crazy thin. I tried to photograph how thin this thing was. I couldn't focus on it.
Right. And so with a TV this thin, mounting actually becomes a problem. Like your typical Visa mount that you're going to order from Monoprice, that ain't cutting it. You need to mount this to the wall, directly to the wall. Your wall better be mostly flat. It doesn't have to be perfectly flat, but it does need to be pretty stinking flat. And the way it basically mounts is you've essentially got a giant sheet of paper that's the size of your TV. You mount that to the studs in your wall, and then it magnetically connects to the TV. Your TV is hanging on the wall. Your $5,000 TV is hanging on the wall with magnets.
Yeah. Yeah. And is it 5,000 or is it going to be more? I think it's going to be more than that coming out. It's probably like right now, it's probably like your $8,000 TV. But here's the rub. I think the 65 inch that we looked at weighs in at 17 pounds.
Yeah.
That's 17 pounds.
Well, when you don't have to put any circuitry in there, any speakers, no processing stuff, no HDMI inputs, there's not really much there to weigh.
Now, here's what I love about this. Internally, they colloquially refer to this as the wallpaper. And I particularly like that because I think there's been this longtime vision that OLED and the fact that it can work on a flexible substrate had the promise of getting us to the point where we could actually have wallpaper that was a visual screen of some sort that was programmable. We're not quite there yet, but this is pretty crazy close. And you mentioned that your wall doesn't have to be perfectly flat because this thing can actually adjust to imperfections in the wall. It actually flexes a little bit, and that's okay.
But yeah, like I think a lot of people forgot that about OLED, that it is a bendable technology that can just kind of move around things like that. It's pretty awesome.
Now, you mentioned that all of that goes into a separate box, right? So this has to have some way of, you know, connecting all your inputs and where do you house the circuitry? So there is a separate box, and we've seen breakout boxes on TVs before. In fact, since the early days, since some of the first days of plasma flat screens, we had breakout boxes so that those screens could be really thin. And in those days, really thin was like an inch or an inch and a half. Right. They've done that in this case, and they've made the intentional decision of making the breakout box be a sound bar that sits somewhere in front of where you have your television mounted on the wall. And that's where it all falls apart for me.
Yeah, it really does, because it's a gigantic soundbar. It's a really gigantic soundbar. But the really big problem here is that I don't think anybody who's spending $8,000 on a TV wants to use a soundbar. Now, I know there are some, because people have more money than sense. But if I'm spending $8,000 on a TV, I'm going to have a crazy Dolby Atmos setup to hook up to it. Right. I don't want to use your stupid soundbar.
Right.
And you have no choice. It has to be hooked up. You don't have to use the speakers, but it has to be hooked up. I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like that either. I really don't understand why they took that approach. They said that you don't have to use it. I asked, well, could you potentially use it as just a front or front and center speakers? And right now, no, but apparently enough people have asked that question that they are talking about that now internally.
I don't know how they could make that work.
I don't know either, because how do you sync it with the AV output? I mean, I don't know how any of that works. Right. Maybe that happens magically through HDMI or something. But the other thing is, and you mentioned this earlier, this thing is monstrous. You know, it, if you remember what I believe was really the first soundbar, the Yamaha soundbar that allowed you to project 5.1 around your room, this is probably half again as long. And instead of it being vertically tall and something that looks like it should obviously hang against the wall, it's kind of short and deep, looking like, and in fact demonstrated, sitting on top of a surface. It's weird.
It's super weird. I don't like it. I'm not buying one of these, Richard. And I'm going to blame
that.
And that's
why, right?
That's the only reason. It's not that it would be more than, you know, than the car that I drive to work every day. Yeah. So let's move on to Samsung's TV. It's not OLED. It's QLED, which is Q is a cooler letter than O. It must be cooler than OLED. It's not, actually.
It looks like an O with a little thing through it.
It does. And, you know, I fully expected them to take that little line that goes through the bottom right part of a Q and make it as tiny as possible so that it would look like an O. And people would be like, whoa, Samsung has OLED. I'm buying a Samsung OLED. And you're not. You're buying a quantum dot LED. It's new quantum dots. It's got a metal core. It's fancier. It's better. It still looks really great.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, it's not to suggest that it's not good. And one might argue that their pictures are almost as good as the OLED screens that we're seeing from LED. From LG. I don't know that I would go that far, but they have beautiful, beautiful pictures. I was impressed even when we were in the press announcement at the, you know, near the middle of the room using my zoom lens taking pictures. That thing was crazy, crazy vivid.
Well, and crazy, crazy bright. That's where the Samsung TV beats the LG TV, is that it's still brighter. So if all you care about is HDR that'll burn your retinas when you look at the sun, then the Samsung QLED is probably the TV to go with.
Now, the other thing they announced with this is, and, you know, Samsung's been trying to do this with varying degrees of success for the last couple of years, a series of TVs that kind of fit into your lifestyle. So they have a TV that is on a stand, or a TV that they have a tripod for that your dog could knock over, or a mountable version. And the mountable versions come in, I guess, different artistic frames that would actually allow you to mount your television like a piece of art. You know, we've seen third-party accessory companies produce and kind of live off of this as a type of product for years and years and years. Now the TV itself can actually maybe even double as a frame, because maybe just leave it on with revolving artwork or something. I'm not convinced that's as far-fetched now as it used to be when we were looking at those big, huge plasma screens.
Right, because this TV is also crazy thin, because they're also going with the breakout box, but they didn't do it into a soundbar. It's just a regular black box that you put on top of your receiver, hide it away in your closet. No one ever cares what it looks like, and you get to use your Atmos, and everything is wonderful. Yeah, so Samsung wins in a couple areas there, but that LG TV is magical.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, we all saw a lot of things, some things that we liked, some things that we didn't. Let's start with the things that we liked. I have one thing that is related to what we're talking about, and one thing that is not even remotely related to what we're talking about. I have two favorite things from the show. I think Dish Anywhere on Flex TV is one of the hidden gems at this show. They didn't even make a press release about this.
Nope.
It was just demonstrated in their booth. In a corner next to this big, huge thing that they had built for demonstrating the Amazon Echo integration that they had with Hopper. So I don't know why they didn't make a bigger deal out of it. I fully expect that CE Pro will have a big post about it. We have a post about it. Check that out if you're interested. I think this is awesome, and I can't wait to see this for real. My favorite non-media, non-home automation thing at the show is a washer and dryer.
That's kind of old and lame of you, Richard.
No, but it isn't old and lame at all. I don't know why, but Samsung every year manages to do one or two things in the appliance space that I really, really like and one or two things in the appliance space that I really, really hate. In this particular case, they have created a washer and dryer that each have two functions. So the washer, and last year they came out with a washer that had kind of a sink in the top and then the ability to have a full washer underneath that. Now that sink is actually a full separate washer. Now, I don't mean full size, but it is a fully capable washer in the top part of the washer above your sideways washer bin in the front loading washer. So you could have delicates in the top and regular stuff in the bottom. Or if you only had a tiny load of stuff, you don't have to put it in the big front loading bin. You can just put it in the top. Or if you have, you know, a bunch of stuff that you're doing, but two things that are bright colors and you don't want to end up with pink underwear because you put some red socks in with them, you can run them separately. So I think that's brilliant. Secondly, they have a dryer that has two separate dryer capabilities in it. The dryer that has the full front loading bin for drying, and then a top loading piece that allows you to lay things in it, or that, you know, kind of like you would dry sweaters or sneakers or things like that. And you usually have to get that folding tray out and get it to sit in there without getting knocked over when it's on. And it's always a big pain. Now it's just built into the dryer at the top. Of course, these are connected appliances. Of course, they're all electronic. And this is one thing I think they're doing right. I really, really like it.
All right. It's cool. I like it. All right. For my two favorites, I've got two. I didn't put the second one in the notes because I don't want you to know what it is. My first one is also related to what we've already talked about, and that would be the NVIDIA Shield updates. It's awesome. It's really awesome. I don't know if I said this when we talked about it earlier, but all of those software-related things, they're coming on the NVIDIA Shield TV that's already available. I've already got one of these.
Nice.
I'm going to get all these updates.
Nice.
Yeah, that's the way to do this. Thank you, NVIDIA. My other thing that I'm not sure that I would call this a favorite, but it was really cool, and it is one of the things that I will definitely be telling people about when I get home, and that is a car that is largely made of foam. The company, I had to look up my picture of this because it's not like something I actually plan to write about or anything. I think they're called Spira4U. I don't really get it, but it's a pretty small car, only fits one person. Like the whole front half of it is made of thick black foam, and it's just black foam. They didn't even paint it or anything like that. It's an electric car. It'll go 75 miles an hour. It'll go even faster than that, but they've governed it because you probably don't want to go more than 75 miles an hour in a car that small. It's
particularly one as light as a car made out of foam.
Yes, this car is less than 500 pounds. You could pick it up with a couple of buddies for sure. It'll also float. You crash this thing into a lake because your GPS told you to turn. It'll float on the lake.
Oh, it's like a James Bond car.
It is. And it's super safe. You crash into somebody, you know, like you run over a drunk in a crossing walk, they'll probably be okay-ish.
Okay-ish. Your car didn't hit them. The pavement did, but the car didn't.
Right. You know, somebody crashes into you, probably going to be all right. Like, they had one there that an F-250, which is a gigantic truck, T-boned. It rolled four times, and basically the guy got out of the car after it had rolled, drug it out of the ditch back onto the road, and was able to drive away.
Yeah, and the physics of this actually make complete sense, right? You have something crazy light and, like, you know, it doesn't have the resistance that a car would have if it were hit by a truck. A car is kind of fighting back as it's getting hit because it has so much force of its own because of its mass. If you have something this light that gets hit with any significant force, it's just going to kind of like flip away.
Right.
And
most of that force is absorbed by foam.
Right. Exactly. So the car is designed so that if that were to happen, then the contents and the, you know, the vehicle itself is largely unscathed, and therefore the contents are largely unscathed. It's crazy, but it's a cool concept.
And it's only like $8,000.
So is it real yet?
They say they've got a few of them out on the roads. They say a pizza delivery driver bought one because he's like, listen, you drive one of these things around town, everyone wants to talk to you. So you should buy one of these, put advertisements for your business on them because everybody's going to see it. It's kind of brilliant. I like
Interesting.
It.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
All right. So there's things we like, but then there's also things that we think are kind of dumb.
Yeah, let me do a short one first. You didn't get to see this, but I did, and I even tried it because I just had to see how dumb it really was. It's called the Baselet. Sounds like bass. It also sounds like bracelet. That's what it is. It's a subwoofer for your wrist.
Oh, sort of. Yes.
That's the idea, at least. It's a tiny black plastic thing that you strap onto your wrist. It plugs into your headphones, and it vibrates to the music to give you the simulation that you would get from a really great bassy system.
Is it wireless?
I don't think it was. Maybe it was. Maybe it was. I think the band was wireless, but you had to use, because there's basically two parts. There's the part on your wrist, and then the part that you plug your music into, which means you have to be using wired headphones. So you basically plug this into your phone, and then your headphones into this, so that it gets the signal, sends it to the baselet, it shakes your wrist. I don't know why we're still talking about this. It's dumb.
Totally dumb. Totally dumb. All right. Well, my favorite stupid device is a major home entertainment center, a consolidation of all of your home entertainment devices, of your DVD player, your Blu-ray player, your live television, streaming devices, everything you could possibly want. One box with enormous amounts of storage if you want it. And it does this because it has a drive and it has a CPU and it has a browser and it has storage. It's starting to sound a lot like a PC, isn't it? And you can have all of this for just $3,000. It will allow you to rip your DVDs and your Blu-rays. Now, how? We're not really quite sure. I mean, we all remember Kaleidoscape. They didn't win that lawsuit.
No, they didn't.
They're not around anymore.
No, they're not.
Somehow, this company figures that they're going to get away with this. And their lawyers think they will. Okay. And they think people are going to pay $3,000 for it. Okay. I don't want one. Do you want one, Josh?
I don't want one.
Here's the kicker. The way it gets all these services is a web browser. You just go to the website and you just play whatever you want to on the website. So they don't need to have apps for it. They don't have to be optimized for a 10-foot interface. Seriously.
Should we name the company? Should we do that?
Oh, I didn't even do that. Yes, it's called The Modulus. Now, I mean, I'm sure the people behind this are well-intended, but I don't understand how they got as far as they're getting so far when they plan on having something out this year. They plan on having something out by the beginning of quarter three without seeing what's already happened in this space and just, you know, believing that these decisions, the things we just told you about, are the right experience for people in front of the television and that people will pay $3,000 for that. I don't understand how they've concluded all that.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. All right, there's one more device and I saw this at CES Unveiled, which is typically an event where it's mostly scrappy little startups. At least that's what it was intended to be. Scrappy little startups. They don't have a lot of money, but they're too small to really get any attention on the show floor. They certainly couldn't be in Central Hall where Samsung and those guys are. So they go to Unveiled to show their little project. And this thing sounded cool. It's a very small box. It's a square little box that's super rugged, and it's essentially a portable hard drive, and it'll store all of your movies and your music and your photos. It'll automatically sync photos from your phone to it. It also has a Wi-Fi hotspot so that if you're traveling and you want to watch movies off of it, they've got an app for your phone and you can stream the movies right off of it. It's super cool. And I said, that's awesome. How much is it? And I don't even remember. I think it was $300 to start at $300.
It was three something to start.
And that was with, I think, 250 gigs of storage. And I said, really? Like, why such a small amount of storage for that price? Oh, well, that's because we're using Samsung's latest technology for their SSDs. It is crazy fast, Richard. Crazy, crazy fast. Because you know what I need in a portable hard drive? Crazy fast
storage. Well, maybe you do. I don't know. It's worth mentioning, this is pretty much the same thing as a device that SanDisk sells, I think, for $129. Pretty much the same thing that the Hopper Go is for $99. Of course, that's specifically limited to the Dish ecosystem and things that you download onto it. But $300 to start. Keep going, Josh.
Yeah, it tops out at 2 terabytes. How much is the 2 terabyte version?
Too much.
$1,200? Is that what it was?
It was well over $1,000.
For 2 terabytes of storage. Now, okay, they're a small, scrappy startup, right, Richard? Like, they'll go away?
Well, they realize they're starting small and they don't really know what they're getting themselves into. But maybe when they're bigger, maybe when they have some real funding, then they'll kind of be able to reposition a little bit.
They might have a little bit of funding because I saw them at another event. I saw them at Showstoppers, I think. So they at least made it to 2 events.
Right.
But they couldn't have much more money than that, right?
Well, they were in Central Hall.
What? Central Hall?
Yeah.
But, so it must have been like a card table in Central Hall, like in the corner with all of the like Chinese knockoff like CB radios, right?
You and I are so bad at this pretending. No, this was a huge booth. This wasn't like, you know, Microsoft or Intel or Qualcomm size booth, but this was a major vendor booth, larger than the average size booth in Central Hall.
It was probably twice the size of Dish's booth. It was at least as big as
Dish's booth. It was at least as big as Dish's booth. That's a good way of looking.
I don't get it. I don't see how this product goes anywhere, but they've apparently got a whole lot of money.
Yeah, someone's backing them.
Yep.
Crazy. Oh, wow. Well, there's always lots of stuff at CES. We looked at all the things that we liked and that we didn't like and posted a bunch of stuff. We're going to try and get some more things up there in the next couple of days. We also looked at smart home tech, and we'll talk about that on Home On. We would normally end our show talking about what's in our entertainment centers. And y'all know that we have acquired new TVs. We did set them up over the holiday break, but we'll be talking about that in some upcoming episodes. So, Josh, why don't you get us out of here? It's been a long week, and I think you and I still have some recording to do.
Yes, we do. So if you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Josh Pollard. Richard is at Richard Gunther. And the website is, of course, at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're at Facebook at facebook.com/TheDMZ. We've got an email address, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, where you can just use the contact form on the website. We've mentioned Home On a whole bunch of times. It's no surprise. The next episode of Home On is going to be about CES.
And the last episode was about CES. We had Rychrist from the folks at CNET join us and talk a lot about what we expected to see here, and also kind of reflected a lot on what happened to the stuff that we saw at 2016. You and I always joke about how we don't see half of the things that came out, and there were a number of things that didn't actually make it to market. So we talked a lot about that. It was a good episode. I think people enjoy it. That is what people should be hearing now in the feed. And as you just mentioned, the next episode coming up will be about CES, and you'll be joining me on that as we wrap what we saw here in Las Vegas in 2017.
All right. Well, you can find Home On and this show, Entertainment 2.0, on iTunes and you know, everywhere. If you like our shows, subscribe, definitely subscribe. And then if you really like us, head on over to iTunes. You'll do us a big favor if you would leave us a rating and a review, and we would love you forever if you did that. So thank you for taking a couple of minutes out of your day to do that for us. Helps us a lot, and we appreciate it. And then, you know, when we're not at CES, we normally do the show live. It's a little tough to do from a random hotel room with all of us in it. But we should be back next week doing the show live. We're normally Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It's not always that time, so follow us on Twitter to know for sure when we're going to be doing the next recording, and be be sure to check that out and join us because it's a lot of fun. That's going to do it for episode 393 from CES in Las Vegas. I'm Josh Pollard. He's Richard Gunther. And we will be back next time for episode 394. Until then, adios.
Goodbye.